From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Kinnairy. Thanks for joining us. Patrick Mork has spent more than two decades working in the tech world, building and leading marketing teams at tech startups and helping to launch numerous products and brands across three different continents. In 2011, he joined Google and led the team there that created the Google Play brand. He describes himself as a marketer and a storyteller at heart. But in 2017, he had a major life crisis that led him to pivot toward coaching and developing leaders and startups across Latin America. He moved to Chile and launched Leap. It's a leadership development company. All of that inspired his first book, Step Back and Leap, Nine Keys to Unlock Your Life and Make Bleep Happen. These days, Mork is advising CEOs and leaders of venture or private equity-backed companies, mostly in the tech world. He was on the Florida Gulf Coast University campus last week to give a talk titled Becoming Unstoppable, Five Pillars to Build Resilience in the Age of AI, and stopped by the studio for a chat. Patrick Mork, welcome to Gulf Coast Life. It's good to see you.
Great to be here, Mike. Thanks for the invite.
Describe yourself in the context of who you are professionally today, because I've done research on you. You've gone through some evolutions throughout the course of your career. Where are you at right now?
So where I'm at today is I'm an executive advisor working with CEOs and leaders of private, either venture capital or private equity-backed companies. So, you know, when things are going really wrong or like, you know, young founders scaling a company very, very quickly, raising a lot of money, facing a lot of difficulties, and they need adult supervision, oftentimes that's when they call me in, is to help mentor and advise and work with these leaders and these founders.
Are they typically tech companies?
Nine times out of 10, they're tech companies. So, you know, my background, I worked a long time in Silicon Valley. I was a startup guy, ran marketing times three times as a chief marketing officer, was at Google a couple of years. So, you know, for 20 plus years, I was in the tech ecosystem. And so, you know, I've been in the trenches. I know how hard it is to be a founder. I know how difficult it is to scale these companies, how much pressure is involved. And, you know, that these people, oftentimes the more successful they become, the more difficult it gets for them to ask for advice and support.
Part of your bio is you were part of the team that created Google Play. And when I first read that and then I read up on you, I was like, but you're not an engineer. And then I thought, you know, Google Play, correct me if I'm wrong, but Google Play was sort of an integration of existing systems. And of course, there was engineering involved with that. But what made it real for users was what you guys did. You were the ones who brought it to the world. Did I get that about right?
Yeah, you know, we brought it to the world from the perspective of the brand and the marketing of the store, right? So it was, you know, before Google Play, you know, for those listeners out there who remember this, you know, there was a store called Android Market, which was if you had an Android phone, you would go to the market and you would get your apps and games there. And that experience was pretty bad at the time because, you know, the quality of the apps and games was not very good. They didn't have music. They didn't have books. They didn't have movies or TV shows. So Google at the time was at a significant disadvantage compared to Apple, you know, which had the App Store, but it had all these other content types. So I was brought in to lead the marketing effort on, okay, what are we going to call this thing? What's the brand going to look like? We need to build a marketing team and a story to help sell and position this.
And that explains, though, yeah, you know, you can have the best tech in the world, but if you don't have a marketing team and a story that brings it to human beings, then it's just a thing sitting on a shelf.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better, Mike. I mean, you know, there are so many companies out there these days, and even more now in the age of AI, that are, you know, they go out and they'll build something really awesome and they think, well, I've built something really awesome. I spent the last year doing it, so everybody's going to download it and pay for it. And that's just not the way the world works. You know, I mean, with some very rare exceptions, you know, like Facebook, like ChatGPT, whatever, most people need to go out and create a story. They need to package their product or service. They need to get out and give people a convincing reason to use it. That's what marketers do.
What part of the pie of when you work with companies now is that aspect, or have you moved into a different kind of help?
Great question. So it's a very small part of the pie. And that's the funniest thing is, you know, 8 years ago, I had a really, really bad burnout. You know, my wife left, my kind of whole world fell apart. And I looked at myself in the mirror the day after I got fired at a startup, and I was like, you know what? I don't think I want to keep doing marketing anymore. And it was a horrible moment, Mike, because I was like, well, if I don't want to do marketing, what the hell do I do? You know, because I had, you know, I was divorced. I had alimony payments. I don't, you know, I had not made millions like some people. And, you know, I went through a profound period of kind of self-discovery where I read a lot of books. I did these like meditation retreats. You know, I hired a coach to help me find out the meaning of life. And that ultimately is what culminated in my first book. And you know, it was there that I discovered that I wanted to work in leadership development. I wanted to help people become better leaders, and I wanted to help people find careers of meaning and purpose. And so, you know, I've dedicated the last 8 years of my life to, you know, creating personal and professional transformation for executives and for leaders, for people.
What's the name of your book, Five Pillars of...
The book is actually called Step Back and Leap.
Step Back and Leap.
And that's nine keys to help transform and unlock your life, right? And that came out in 2023. It was a bestseller. And from then, you know, I've subsequently been talking a lot about resilience, which is, you know, the talk that I'm giving today at FGCU.
That's the five pillars.
Which is, yeah, the five pillars of resilience and how to survive and prosper in the age of AI, which kind of dovetails nicely with the book, but, you know, it's kind of the extension of it.
I watched the YouTube video of the talk that you gave in Cape Coral in May of 2025. The five pillars are purpose, values, human connection, ability to reframe, and faith.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. I changed one of those subsequently, even though I think I changed values, and I'll tell you why. You know, values I still believe is incredibly important, but I replaced it with ask for help.
Ah.
Because what I found is that, particularly in the age of AI, where so many people are relying on chatbots and AI to give them and tell them everything and almost become their friend, there is a risk that we're losing out on human connection, which I think is absolutely essential, you know, to be successful and to be well-balanced mentally. You know, I think we're starting to see, well, we have seen, you know, an epidemic of loneliness in this country, right? 12% of all adults in the United States does not have a close friend or family member, 12%, which is scary. It's up 4x from 1990.
Which would be like, you know, 50 million people or something.
It's a lot, yeah. It's a lot. And so, you know, for us to kind of live in a life where we are fulfilled and happy, our ability to connect with other human beings is essential. And so that became one of the pillars.
I've often found it very sort of dishearteningly ironic that as we've scaled up our ability to communicate, we've wound up less connected somehow.
Very true.
Is AI going to help or hurt that equation from your perspective?
I think it depends on the person who's using it. I think it depends on the culture of the organization where they work. I think in some cases it will help, in other cases it will hurt. You know, I gave a talk to the FinTech Americas conference in Miami a few weeks ago to the banking industry, and they were asking me to talk about, you know, how is AI going to impact teams? What is it going to do to resilience on teams? And, you know, what I told, you know, the assembled bankers there and what I've seen through my research and through research that was published by Google last year is that, you know, AI is not going to fix your culture. AI is going to expose your culture. So if you have a great culture with good leadership and you have a healthy culture and you have good communication, collaboration, and you have high-performance teams, it's going to turbocharge those teams. But if you have the opposite, you know, if you have a toxic culture, if you have poor leadership, if you have people that are not talking, not collaborating, not only is AI not going to help you, it's going to pour gasoline on that problem. It's going to magnify, you know, the problem that you already have. So, you know, we have to be careful with AI because we think it's this panacea that's going to solve all problems. It's going to help some people and it's going to hurt a lot of other people.
How do you use it in your life?
Wow. I mean, I have completely changed the way I work in the last 2 years. It's unbelievable. So let me give you a practical example. You know, when I'm working with one of these leaders, you know, whether it's a Fortune 500 company or whether it's, you know, somebody that's running a high growth scaling startup or private equity backed company, you know, let's say that we have an online session, you know, a 90-minute session where we're talking about some problems that they're experiencing in the business. I will record all that session, right, using Otter AI or Firefly or one of those. As soon as we're finished the session, I'll take the transcript. I'll run it through one of my coaching GPTs in ChatGPT. The coaching GPT will analyze the entire session as a master-level coach and tell me what percentage of the time was I talking versus listening. What was the quality of my question? Was I asking open-ended questions? Was the client, you know, opening themselves up and being vulnerable? Did I ask the right questions in the right place? So it's kind of coaching me as I do this, right, for example.
Huh.
And then, you know, it will suggest certain ideas. It will suggest certain exercises that I can pass the client based on my book and based on all the exercises that I have created over the years, and I have fed into this GPT. So the GPT not only knows me intimately, right? It has years of data points, journal entries, my book, my notes, all my other coaching notes. But it's so it's coaching me and it's helping me stay true to the way that I coach. And it's evaluating how I coach. And it's showing me things that I may have missed in the conversation with that client. Right. So that's an example. Another example, for example, you know, one of the things that you find when you're doing leadership development and you're helping people do any kind of transformation is that transformation only happens through the creation of new habits. Right. So let's say you tell me, okay, I want to be healthy. I want to lose weight. I want to be in the best shape of my life. The way that you do that is you get into the habit of going to the gym, drinking 2 liters of water a day, sleeping 7 or 8 hours, right? You start to build those habits. Now, when you're working on a transformation with a leader, you know, as a leadership advisor, you're not there with them all the time, right? You're meeting them 2 or 3 times a month for an hour. Well, what happens in between? Because that's actually where the work happens, right? So what I do is I've built like custom GPTs that my clients can use when they're not with me. Right. So when I need them to practice how to give feedback to a difficult employee and they need somebody to role play with, they can use one of the GPTs that I've built for them as a partner, as a sparring partner. Right. They can go through that. So there are so many ways, Mike, that I use AI that I could never have done a couple of years ago.
So first question, when you say you create a GPT that is the stuff that you have fed into it, mm-hmm. your book and everything, yeah. it's persistent. Is that through ChatGPT? Is that a custom thing? Does it exist locally? Like, give me the details on where does that live and how does it remain persistent and yeah. how do you feed it that stuff?
Yeah. So in this case, that is kind of like it's just a GPT that I create within ChatGPT.
Okay, right? So it's a personality, if you will.
Exactly, it's called almost like a project, although it's not quite a project.
Understood.
You know, but you basically have an option when you go to the web version where you can create your own GPT.
Okay,
and you can create your own GPT to do whatever you need it to do. Right, so I can create a GPT for content creation. I can create a GPT for coaching. I can create a GPT for leadership. Whatever I want to do. So in this case, you know, I've created Patrick's Leadership GPT. Right, which is also publicly available on their kind of GPT store of ChatGPT. Right, so I've also made it publicly available, and I have shared the link to that GPT with alumni from my business school in Miami, and I've said, hey, if any of you guys need help, if you need coaching, you know, here's a link. You can always use this. It's free. Give me some feedback. Tell me what you see. And then I periodically update that GPT with like my latest notes or, you know, my latest techniques or research and stuff like that so that it gets better over time. So that's an example of how I use it.
ChatGPT was launched at the end of 2022. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there were previous versions of GPT. GPT-2 came out in like 2021 or 2020. Were you aware of that arc, or when it hit the world, were you on day one like the rest of us?
I was somewhat aware of the arc because, you know, again, I've been working in technology a long time. And so I was keeping track of it and people were talking to me about it. I think, you know, really the last 2 years is when I've started to use it a lot. And now, you know, I've started using Claude much more because there are certain things that I find just easier to use in Claude. There are certain things I find better and more powerful in Claude, especially on co-work. But, you know, to me, it's just become absolutely an essential part of my workflow, right? I have a podcast as well. I use it, you know, to do, you know, research on my podcast guests. I use it to create scripts. I use it for all sorts of things, you know, post-episode where, like, I'll take the entire transcript of the episode that I just recorded, I'll feed it into the, you know, my podcast GPT coach, and I'll be like, okay, what do you think the title of this episode should be? You know, what are the kind of possible hooks that I could use for shorts? Now, obviously, you can use other tools for that too, right? But, you know, so for me, it's just part of how I live and breathe these days.
My guest today is Patrick Mork. His background is in marketing for tech companies. He was a chief marketing officer for Google and led the team there that created the Google Play Store in the early 2010s. These days, he's advising CEOs and leaders of venture or private equity-backed companies, mostly in the tech world. He's also author of Step Back and Leap, 9 Keys to Unlock Your Life and Make Bleep Happen. Mr. Mork was on the Florida Gulf Coast University campus last week to give a talk titled Becoming Unstoppable, 5 Pillars to Build Resilience in the Age of AI. most listeners will remember we had a dot-com boom in the late 90s. Everything got really, really big. There were companies that seemed infeasibly unstoppable. It seemed like there was no way they were going to go anywhere. And then, of course, there was a dot-com crash, and so we lost some big companies that seemed unstoppable, that the underlying infrastructure obviously didn't die.
Yeah.
We are now building the world on top of it. How do you compare the generative AI boom in the last 3.5 years to the dot-com boom in the late 90s? Bigger? Same? Different?
Much, much bigger. Much, much bigger. I think there's a couple of things that are that make the AI revolution much bigger and much more profound than the dot-com boom, in my opinion. I think, first of all, is the speed of the transition, right? If you look at how quickly these LLMs are evolving, how quickly the consumer application layer on top of it is evolving, if you look at how quickly, you know, the energy footprint is evolving, right? I mean, the massive data centers needed to power some of these things. You know, we are moving at a speed that we've never seen before, right? I mean, you know, OpenAI just, you know, had a massive round of funding not too long ago. I think they were valued at $800 billion. They were probably the fastest growing company on the planet in terms of valuation, right? So we have never seen companies grow as quickly as they're growing. You know, there was an article in the New York Times talking about, you know, two guys that, you know, built a company that does $1.2 billion in revenue. And a lot of that is enabled through AI. There's some questionable practices about how they built that. It's a separate question. But, you know, we are seeing companies built at a speed that we've never seen before. And we are seeing also, we're going to see a profound impact on the way we work in ways that we have not seen before. You know, we are starting to see, for example, that entry-level jobs, even for very bright students, are starting to disappear because companies are rethinking their hiring plans. They're thinking, well, you know, if you're at JP Morgan, do we really need another analyst, or can we actually do this through, you know, the in-house LLMs that we've built? And this is touching every industry, and it's touching every country, and it's happening much, much faster. And so there are good things and there are bad things about that. But, you know, to me, humanity has never seen the speed and the depth of change that we're seeing now.
From your perspective, now I'm no tech CEO, but hardware doesn't last forever.
True.
There's been like $750 billion spent on the data center hardware that all this stuff is being built on top of.
Yeah.
It doesn't last forever. Are they going to be able to make enough money to pay that off before they have to replace it with new hardware? Because that's profit they'll have to make from companies that are using those tools, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good question. And, you know, that's one of the things that people are really openly questioning about OpenAI right now is, you know, their CapEx commitments are, you know, literally in the trillions of dollars. And yet, you know, I don't know what their revenue estimate is for this year, but I'd heard somewhere around $14 billion or something. So it is a concern, right? Is like, at what speed are we seeing the return on this investment materialize into such enormous productivity gains that it makes it worth it? Or are we seeing these companies drive the kind of revenues that justify the valuations? You know, I was invited to invest in the Series A of a very, very, very hot startup of a guy who was a serial entrepreneur who has built multiple billion-dollar companies. And the Series A was $5.5 billion valuation. I mean, that's insane, regardless of the guy's success and his track record.
Are there it was insane. Analogies to the dot-com boom?
Absolutely.
You know, are we going to end up with some of these companies that seem unstoppable being memories in 20 years, but the AI infrastructure is still what we're building the world on top of?
It is, but I think there's a couple of differences. I think, first of all, I do think a lot of companies are more disciplined and are being pushed harder by the VC community, venture capital community, to be more conservative on, you know, cash use and to be more careful about, you know, reaching profitability. And you're hearing this a lot in the industry. When I talk to a lot of tech founders, there's a lot of concern around managing cash and being more careful, right? I think that we're also talking about a generation of people that are, you know, incredibly tech savvy, that have learned somewhat from the past. So I'm somewhat optimistic on that front. But yet, you know, the valuations are insane. The amount of money sloshing around is insane. And, you know, one stat that I'll share with you and your listeners, which I think, you know, bears mention is, you know, when I was at the FinTech Americas conference giving this keynote last week, you know, one of the previous speakers from Accenture shared some very you know, disheartening data about the impact of AI in the financial services community. And the data that they shared was that 80% of companies surveyed had made serious investments in AGI initiatives, 80%, and only 6% had seen any kind of meaningful impact. And, you know, there's a lot of data from McKinsey going back years that showed that, you know, 70% of corporate transformations on average fail for many different reasons. When you combine that 70% number, when you combine the fact that people are trying to figure out, you know, AGI and how to use it in the company and not seeing the ROI, and then when you combine the fact that, you know, many people still feel that they're disengaged at work and that there's not enough effort on developing core leadership competencies, you have a big potential problem.
I was bouncing you and your background off Gemini earlier today, and I said, give me a good question for Patrick. So you ready?
This is here Gemini. We go. Okay.
And I think you'll like this one, and all I right. think it dovetails with what you just said. Patrick, you've led teams through the mobile revolution and the App Store explosion. What is fundamentally different about the age of AI for a leader's psyche compared to previous shifts?
What is fundamentally different for a leader's psyche?
What should leaders be considering deeply differently than in eras past?
It's a great question. I would say there's a couple of things that leaders need to consider which are completely different from previous revolutions. The first is, am I leading human beings or agents? And where do I need agents and where do I need human beings? You know, I'm hosting, you know, a private dinner in Miami next week for a group of, you know, elite high-level founders, and that's the topic that we're talking about, because everybody's like, oh my God, you know, do I really need these people? Which people do I now make redundant? Do I freeze hiring? You know, that's one of the biggest questions on people's mind is they've seen the potential behind artificial intelligence. They've seen that, hey, you know, I don't need that copywriter in the Philippines anymore. And that's true. I don't need my executive assistant in Myanmar, right? I have one. And I keep him on because he adds a lot of value and I have a close personal relationship with him and he helps me and I enjoy coaching him and watching him learn and grow. If I wanted to be ruthless, could I cut him and replace him with artificial intelligence? Probably. And he knows that and we've talked about it. And my approach as a leader has been, dude, I don't want to let you go. I need you to learn these tools. I need you to spend every available waking hour that you are not working within reason learning Claude Cowork and learning Gemini and learning these other tools and getting good at it, because your future depends on it. Regardless of whether you work for me or not, your future depends on you knowing these tools. So that's one thing as a leader that you need to wrestle with, is you need to wrestle with, you know, when your CFO comes to you and says, how much budget do you need for your team this year? You're going to have to fight harder than ever to justify having human beings. And so that's something we never had to justify before. That's one issue. I think the other issue is, you know, we already live and we work in an age and a culture, particularly in the United States, where, you know, I think it's fair to say Americans kind of live to work, right? Whereas Europeans work to live. And now, you know, when I talk to people about artificial intelligence and how they're using these AI tools, not a single person that I talk to, Mike, tells me that they're working less, even though we're all more productive, right? Google's research showed that on average, high-performance teams are 18% more productive than they were a couple of years ago using artificial intelligence. Mediocre teams are 46% more productive than they were a couple of years ago. Are we slowing down? No, we're not. We're not slowing down. We're doing more things. We're expected to do more with less. And on top of that, the rate of learning that we need to continue to stay on top of all these changes is crushing some people. It's just, there's too much changing. I mean, if you look at the rate of change of, you know, Anthropic's kind of, you know, feature improvements on Claude every week, you can't even keep on top of it.
Let alone its new Mythos thing.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I read about
it. I won't even get into that.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away by some of the things that they shared about that this week. So you know, these are the things that leaders are facing, which they didn't have to face before. It's, you know, human versus AI at some point. This is becoming a very real conversation. And then, you know, productivity, I think well-being and mental sanity. And I think the last thing I would add to that as well, which I think is a big risk for humanity, is, you know, I don't know if you've come across a book called Anxious Generation,
mm-hmm.
right? So, You know,
I'm very familiar with it.
You're very familiar with it. You're a good parent, as am I, right? And we read and we care about these things. And, you know, for the listeners who haven't read the book, the brief summary is it, you know, traces the impact of smartphones, social media, porn, and video games on teenagers over the last 10 years, right? And there's some nefarious things that we've seen happen to our youth because of the impact of social media, porn, and video games. I worry that AI is going to do the same to adults. That's my worry, is that, you know, if you look at the number of people that are lonely and alone, who have nobody to talk to, and who will potentially be turning to these chatbots as a source of companionship, when you look at people who are going to start relying on these tools for judgment-related decisions, which maybe they shouldn't, right, or who are going to cease to engage with coworkers that are a little bit difficult to work with because it's just easier to get the answer from Claude or ChatGPT, these are warning signals that we need to invest more in our ability to communicate, collaborate, and work well with others, and not distance ourselves and disconnect ourselves even further, which is the risk.
It's one thing for people out in the work world to be able to be nimble enough to take on these new things and learn these new things. If you're a student going away to college right now, is an engineering or tech path the right choice, or is, you know, theater and communication and critical thinking and a broad-based liberal arts education the right choice? Because it seems like, you know, by the time you finish your CS degree, it may not be a CS degree in these times that we're in. And that may seem far-fetched, but it seems like maybe not.
Those are profound questions. I think anybody who's thinking about going to college or who is a first or second year student studying, you know, computer science is probably thinking about these things. I wouldn't be so alarmist as to say, you know, don't go and study computer science in college.
Yeah, I don't, right? I don't want to sound like I'm overstating.
Yeah, I wouldn't
But it used to be a certainty.
It used to be
you could go in, you come out in 4 years, you can get hired by somebody for X amount for sure.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of up in the air.
Absolutely. I think what it's going to require of us is a different set of skills. I think, you know, the person that was focused on learning to write code now needs to be the person focused on organizing and orchestrating AI agents. And those are different skill sets. So, you know, learning the basics of code and, you know, structuring and all that, I still think is a fundamental skill that you need to know, because you need to be able to look at what Claude is writing and understand what it's doing, even if you're not doing it, because it doesn't always get things right. But more importantly, you know, you're going to be the one setting up and, you know, all these agents and defining, you know, how they interact and how they're structured and everything else, which is still going to require some level of human intervention. But you're going to need to learn different skills. To me, if I was going to say to people, you know, what's your best bet out there? You know, what I was just telling people, you know, the vice provost and some other folks from the university here when we were having lunch is the hard skills are going to be the soft skills. If you want to make sure that you are relevant and you are successful in the next years and decades to come, invest in the things that make us human. Invest in becoming a good leader. Invest in, you know, being able to speak and communicate coherently. Invest in active listening. Invest in empathy. Invest in collaboration. Invest in influencing others. Because human beings are not going away anytime soon. And even though we will rely on them less for certain things, we're still going to have to work together. We're still going to have to communicate. We're still going to have arguments. We're still going to have conflicts. And the people that have the skills to manage that are going to be better placed than those who don't.
Well, we are unfortunately out of time, Patrick, but I'd like to thank you. Patrick Mork is an executive advisor of CEOs and leaders of venture or private equity-backed companies. He's also an author and motivational speaker. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
If you missed any of the show, you can always hear all of our episodes on our website, wgcu.org/GCL, or you can find them wherever you find podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Kanairi. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.